I just got married last year, and my wife's original last name was only three letters long, and then she adopted this and was like, oh God. So she's had to deal with that now for the past 6 months or so.
My wife had to downgrade to a much less cooler name. Well, she didn't have to. She chose to, but
right.
She went from Falcon to Wally.
Oh, wow. Falcon.
So, yeah, to Wally. I thought about changing, but...
I was going to say, yeah, did you consider it? Because that's where I would have gone.
Well, my name's Richard, and if it was Richard Falcon, it was just, like, too much. Like, I'd have to be, like, in a detective novel or something like that.
Right.
Welcome to another episode of Jabber and the Drone, the movie review podcast that politely disagrees to agree. From Portland, Oregon, you are my co-host, Richard Wally.
And you are Castry Robinson from sunny California.
And today we have a guest with us, Stephen Guerreri, the screenwriter and a.k.a. YouTube's nerd with words.
Hello, gentlemen. Yes, good to see you. Yes.
It's been a long time since I've actually... interacted with you on the YouTube.
It's been a while. Yeah, I haven't made a video in a couple years, which is probably why that hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Me either. So there you go.
Yeah,
I kind of switched mediums here. Decided to go all audio. Even though originally my plan was to start a podcast to promote my YouTube channel, it kind of ended up going the other direction.
Right. Yeah, I actually, I got a real life job that actually paid money, that basically prevented me from, doing the videos anymore. So not too happy about that. But I'm happy about the paychecks. So
I bet you are. And I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about that. You know, if you were a fan of your videos and watched enough of them, you could kind of get some of the peripheral details of your life situation. And I knew that you were a paid screenwriter living in Hollywood, right?
Correct, yeah.
And how long were you down here?
I was in L.A. for 9 years. So I moved there right out of graduation from college. Mm-hmm. And like a lot of people said, you know, I'm going to go achieve my dreams and go off to Hollywood. And, you know, I worked there for about 10 years doing a bunch of different stuff. Ultimately wanted to get into screenwriting and was able to do it for a couple years. But it's a very grueling process, and it's a lot of rejection and a lot of trying to stay on top of it. And, you know, a lot of like, oh, we're really close to making this movie and now we have no money. So, you know, you can do that for a long time. You can chase that dream, but... it got to a point where I kind of had to start looking at other things and other dreams that I wanted to achieve. So now I write in television, and you can see my work every Monday and Thursday somewhere out there on cable television with some sort of entertainment and maybe a sports element to it. But that's about as much as I can say about it.
Fair enough. But, I mean, what's cool is, well, first you got to move to New York.
Yes.
Which, now you're on a completely different coast, a completely different culture. Well, I don't know, maybe you can go into that a little bit. As far as entertainment industry goes, I'm kind of just still sort of adjusting to the L.A. lifestyle. I have an internship over at a trade magazine in Culver City right now. How does it differ? What's the atmosphere like, East Coast versus West?
Yeah, I mean, you know, West Coast is when you get to L.A., you get to Hollywood, and you're in that area, basically everybody is going after the same thing in some regard. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody you meet at a restaurant, you know, they serve you your coffee, and then they also say, oh, I'm also an actor. You know, so everybody is something slash actor slash writer slash – so everybody is going after the same goals. And that can be kind of exciting because you meet a lot of people, you network, and you can kind of build it out as far as meeting people and getting contacts and getting jobs and stuff. Uh-huh. But it's also, you know, it can be a little tiring when you meet people all doing the exact same thing, going after the same stuff. And so when I moved to New York, it was actually very refreshing. Like, I got rid of my car. I got rid of a lot of my belongings. All my like Star Wars toys and stuff are packed away in a basement somewhere. Not happy about that. But I basically had to minimalize my life. But the other thing that happens is when you're in New York, you meet like all types of different people. So it's not just all of these people in this one industry. You meet all walks of life, and it actually helps. I mean, as far as writing and stuff, like you can actually expand kind of your palette of things that you can write about and people you meet and different types of characters and stuff. And so, and also, you know, the work side, there's not as much, in film and television in New York. It's a little more specialized,
a little more theater centric, right?
And yeah, a lot of theater. So, you know, if that's something you're interested, obviously, New York is the place to go. But it's a little more like my recommendation, that the thing I'm happiest about was moving to LA first and then being able to move back to New York, and kind of a lot of it is in LA. So a lot of contacts and stuff, I still reach out to people in LA, and the New York stuff is like, oh yeah, there's this one project going on there. And so that's kind of how it is. That was my experience, at least.
Right. Well, you can, generally you do it the other way around. Everybody always starts in New York and goes to NYU or something like that, and then eventually, you know, after doing theater for X amount of years, eventually moves to LA. But now that you've already had those contacts, you can kind of have the best of both worlds.
Yeah, and I said when I moved to California first, I was like, well, okay, I got two options, LA or New York. You know what? Let me just go to the furthest one, because if I fail, then I can just go back to Ohio where I came from. And then, you know, New York is just a little bit closer. So at least try like the big leap, before coming back. And luckily I didn't fail. I actually was able to move to New York on my own, and like that was a decision I made. So.
And you've actually had like some of your screenplays optioned, right? Like you've been paid for the writing you've done.
I have. And that's, you know, that's another process that is, very taxing, but it can be like exciting. It's just a lot of long-term stuff. So, you know, I got a manager who was able to help me, kind of focus my writing to put together scripts that people would be interested in. And then you get those out to kind of production companies and people and investors and all this stuff. And you're just trying to gather money. And
yeah,
it becomes a thing where essentially you write the script and then it goes out in the world and you meet with people and you do your best to sell it to them. And even once they say, yeah, I want to option this, which is basically, you know, we're going to take this. We have ownership of it for a year. And if we can get the money, we'll make the movie. And so I had that happen a couple times where it was basically in someone else's hands for a year. And a script, you know, a couple scripts that I was very passionate about went out there. And these people had them, and then they would, you know, just piece by piece would be like, okay, well, we have a director who's interested, and now we have an actor. And so you start to build these pieces, but it really all comes down to money. And if they can't get the money, then it's all going to fall apart. So, you know, a lot of times that's what happened. It basically, my option would run out, and then you move on to the next company or the next person, and you try and keep it going.
And okay. So at least, like, they don't have ownership of it forever, and this thing that you're passionate about is just going to be buried under development hell for all eternity.
Right. And I mean, you know, the deals that I made were essentially, you know, some of them were 6 months, some of them were a year. It all depended on how, just how serious people were about the project. So yeah, it was never that I gave it up forever. You know, I never sold the rights to the script and just said, okay, I'm never going to have anything to do with it. I was actually pretty well involved with a couple of the scripts, and was able to do the rewrites myself, and try and polish it and get it to a point where even in my option agreement, it said that I would remain a writer on the project no matter what.
Good. Yeah,
which doesn't happen all the time. I mean, if you get – these are, you know, smaller groups and smaller companies that were looking to make more indie, low-budget films, and that's pretty much what I write. So, Yeah, I mean, I think once you get to the bigger leagues, as far as, you know, big, big budget stuff, it's like, oh, thank you very much, and now we'll be taking this and giving it to six other writers and, you know, trying to make it terrible, which they usually do.
What movies have influenced you to go into screenwriting?
I kind of have a wide mix, and it's nothing really special or magical, you know? It's like, yeah, you know, growing up, I love Star Wars, obviously, and The Goonies and, you know, The Godfather Part 2 and, like, Terminator 2 is my favorite movie of all time, and that's not like a, you know, not like a
ironic
film
thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's that's not a film snobs, you know, if I tell that to some people, they're like, ugh, well, what the hell's wrong with you, you weirdo? But I think it's one of, you know, it's pretty much a perfect movie in my opinion, and so,
I would agree.
Yeah, I mean, so that's, you know, that's, those are the kind of things, and it's like a kind of a wide variety. Like, I like action movies. I don't write action movies, but but I like them, and I'm kind of influenced by them in a way. And same thing with sci-fi.
Oh, I was just going to say, you kind of, yeah. I mean, you still, no matter what you're doing, it still, like, influences what you're doing, if that makes sense. Like, for me, like, comics, punk, music, and horror kind of influence anything I do, no matter what I do.
Yeah.
It's like, why is there that really weird dark moment there? I don't know. It's just there. Leave it alone.
Yeah, going back to your YouTube thing, for a little while you had a movie review show. So sort of. You had a segment that you would do weekly called Sticky Floor Fridays, where you kind of talked a little about what was going to come out in the weekend and what we can kind of expect from the releases, given like the pedigrees and that kind of stuff. But you would do movie reviews every once in a while. And I've showed your Watchmen review to a number of friends, because I think it really succinctly gets down to the problems with that movie. The problems that I had, anyway.
Yeah.
What got you onto YouTube, and are you sad that you weren't able to kind of see that through?
Yeah, I am sad, because I felt like as I was kind of getting, really it was like the move to New York changed things a little bit. It's like I changed locations. I was in a different city, and my whole setup that I had originally, the way I shot the videos, just kind of completely changed. And suddenly I was living out of a studio apartment again, and I'm trying to shoot these videos against a brick wall. And I'm like, well, I mean, it's a little bit more of a challenge, but, you know, whatever. So it was, it just started to kind of become a little more tedious, and a little less, what the spirit was, which is supposed to be kind of fun and, you know, really celebrating movies in a way. And so, I wish I had time to continue doing it, and, you know, maybe I'll get back to it. But yeah, I mean, the original idea was basically to review movies, without actually seeing them, which, seems really stupid, but, but it's more, like you said, it's more kind of judging it based on all the peripherals and kind of the, you know, the idea of, you know, well, here's who directed it and here's who's starring in it and here's what the reviews are saying and, you know, here's my gut feeling on it and just, you know, trying to do it in a different way. Cause, you know, a lot of people review movies and, that's a noble profession. I was just trying to find a different angle and, just because I, you know, it just gave me a reason to talk about Jason Statham a lot, basically.
Right, right.
So, yeah. And then, you know,
a noble pursuit.
Yeah, exactly. So then I kind of, then I started branching out, when I really started to get into it a little more and I was gaining a couple more followers here and there. I wouldn't say it was like ever a massive success, but I felt like, you know, I started to get some loyal people who were always commenting every week. And, you know, there was a real sense of interaction. And I felt like I was building a very, very small community, but, so I wanted to kind of expand that a little bit and actually start reviewing movies for real. So that was so that's kind of where the Watchmen thing came from and stuff that really it was more movies that I was passionate about one way or the other. If I saw it and like I remember the Conan remake or Conan, like not the talk show host, but the Conan remake, I saw that and I hate remakes for the most part. And so I saw that and I was so disappointed in it that it was just like, I got to talk about this freaking thing because it's so bad, you know. But on the other hand, it's like I saw Super 8 and that movie blew me away. And so I had to talk about that in a positive way. And I really wanted to get that message out to people of like, yeah, you should go see this if you love movies.
I don't want this to sound like just flattery for its own sake, but I think given what your content was and your on-screen personality and the rise of subscribers that I was seeing, I was kind of surprised when you left because I honestly think that if you kept going the way you were probably destined to be pretty big.
Oh, that's yeah, that is pretty flattering and also makes me really sad.
But you're a professional who like gets to work in the actual entertainment industry, so I wouldn't be too sad about it.
Oh yeah, totally. I mean, that's, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's more of that was a real passion project. Mm-hmm. I guess just to use kind of the lame term that people use, but like, you know, I mean, it was something that I just had fun doing. It was just a hobby. It's like, I love movies and I love talking about movies. And so that was a thing that, that kind of used all those things and it was unfettered. There was no one saying, you know, do this, don't do that. And I think that's the greatest thing about doing YouTube videos and stuff.
You're your own editor. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get into the, show. Today we're going to be reviewing Chappie and in our Netflix homework, BMX Bandits, which you assigned us. Steve.
I did,
and
yes.
Before we get into all that, we are going to do a little bit of movie news. Richard, why don't you go ahead and go first?
Okay, that Diablo Cody lady, she tends to do movies once in a while. She wrote that Juno thing.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be rewriting Barbie for Sony. That definitely puts a different spin on the movie and what they're kind of going for, and it shows you a little bit of, I guess, what they want to do with it, whether they're going to do that or not, because it always seems like, if I'm being blunt, Sony kind of ruins it in post when they're in the middle of shooting it. So I don't know, but it does seem like an interesting and better move if you're going to make a Barbie movie instead of just, you know, like princesses floating off around in clouds, like get somebody like Diablo involved. And I don't know. How do you feel about this, Cassidy? Specifically, I was interested because like you're into like the Brady Bunch movie and I'm revealing all your dark secrets right now.
Those aren't dark at all. I will freely admit that I love the Brady Bunch movie. I think this is kind of the smart way to go. It seems like, you know, you bring on somebody like Diablo Cody, it could possibly have that sort of a Lord and Miller sort of self-referential satire vibe to it. We'll see if they'll let her do that, but she certainly has the ability to do that. And if it's, you know, if it gets to be funny and, you know, she's a little sardonic and kind of semi-dark every once in a while. Well, certainly something like Young Adult is very dark. I don't know if this movie will be anything like that. I'm sure it won't. But I think it's a, you know, I couldn't have thought of a better screenwriter to be attached to a completely soulless IP like Barbie. What about you, Steve?
Well, yeah, I saw this story a couple days ago, and I immediately moved right past it. But, maybe you guys can help me out here because I did not look into it all that much. Is it supposed to be like a live action like version of it? Is it a, you know, what the hell is this? What's going on here? I'm so confused.
Yeah, it's a live action comedy. I don't know if they have anybody attached to direct, but okay. I guess I'm doing a little bit more speculation just based on who they got involved. And I don't think Diablo Cody would get like involved unless they'd let her go that kind of more sarcastic, satirical route, because I don't know. I haven't seen a lot of her stuff.
I think you've seen more than I have. I've seen Juno and Young Adult, and that's all I've seen from her, but I didn't see Jennifer's Body. But didn't you watch United States of Terror?
Yeah. And none of, but that all has this, you recognize it in the dialogue, in the content, you know, and obviously most of those things have to do with female sexuality, at least in a part. And so that's why I'm like, well, she's going to have to play with it somewhere. So, I mean, it kind of depends on rating, too. I'm guessing they're going to go PG-13, but maybe with the 50 Shades of Grey inflection and how post 50 Shades of Grey now, we can have a porno version of Barbie.
That's,
I don't know.
Now we're getting somewhere. I'm listening now. Diablo Cody, it's funny because, you know, obviously Juno was like that breakout of like, oh, my God, we just found the new like hit screenwriter. This is going to be amazing, whatever her career is. And then she did Jennifer's Body, and I think everyone was like, oh, okay. All right, well, it was a good, you know, good run, I guess. But I really liked Young Adult.
So did I.
It was just on TV a couple weeks ago, and I sat down, wasn't planning on watching the whole thing, and I ended up sitting through the entire thing again. So, you know, I don't know. This doesn't seem like something that's the demographic for me, and it might be creepy if I show up. Like, I used to, maybe I shouldn't admit this, but I saw The Fault in Our Stars in the theater, and I was surrounded
by... Sounds like you're the right demographic to me.
You know what? Let's revise this a little bit. But yeah, I saw that, and back in the day when I was doing the reviews, I saw, I think, all of the Twilights in the theater. And so I'm familiar with the tween audience, and it's a terrible audience to be a part of in those theaters. Like, Fault in Our Stars was literally all you would hear the whole movie is just like, feep, 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 and just like the ruffling of, you know, tissues and stuff. And then I felt really creepy and weird because I was surrounded by that. So, yeah, I don't know.
Were you there with your significant other?
I was, yeah. That was kind of my...
that helps.
That's my excuse, so I can use that. but it doesn't, you know, it doesn't take away the fact that I was sitting there and I was definitely the oldest person by like 20 years.
Yeah. Well, my next story here is that it looks like MGM plans to remake the Don Bluth animated film The Secret of Nim. It says here on the AV Club, the new film, which is set to be a mixture of live action and CGI, will be written by Ice Age 5 scribe Michael Berg, who reportedly plans to focus on the origins of the Rats of Nim. So if this is just the origins, that sounds to me like they plan on sequelizing this, which I don't know if that's the way to go, but if it's anything like the Ice Age franchise, that's kind of how they do. Either of you have an opinion?
I love the original movie still. I've mm-hmm. always liked Don Bluth stuff just because he has this weird dark inflection.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why I went
I'm gonna
straight
say
into
that's
horror afterwards.
Why. Yeah.
but Secret of Nim specifically, that was one I had on VHS, and I think I even might have wore that out as a kid. The old like villain rat in it always really appealed to me.
It's a super creepy movie.
It really is, yeah. So I don't know. I can't imagine it in this Pixar.
Well, this is done by if it's done by the Ice Age is I think DreamWorks and MGM is not Pixar. So I'm feeling like this is going to be, I don't know, with the live action and CG. Whenever I hear that when it comes to children's movies, I'm always a little freaked out because it makes me think like Smurfs movie is a possibility, which would be a terrible direction to take this story in, and I hope they don't.
I kind of have mixed feelings about this, because it's one of those, like, Secret of Nim was one of those movies that was kind of on the fringe for me. I watched it as a kid, and yeah, it did have that dark kind of tinge to it, which I put it in the same category as Dark Crystal for some reason. But again, I don't really remember a lot about The Secret of Nim, but I'm kind of curious if this is, like, I mean, is this something people are pining for right now? Is this like a... I just don't know. Like, is The Secret of Nim like very popular at this moment? Or is this a thing that they're just like digging back through the archives of like, oh yeah, remember I saw that movie when I was a kid? I don't know. Let's take that and remake it or do something with it. You know, like I don't have any original ideas. Can you guys please give me one from a long time ago?
Right.
And so I don't know. I mean, I don't know if you guys have any insight on that or if this is just a property that someone felt like they needed to revive. I mean, I'm not against it, but
I have a theory with some of the remakes too, because I don't think that they're actually sold to the kids. I think they're sold to the parents who have nostalgia to give it to their kids. And so I think that that's kind of sometimes the game plan, but I don't know. Maybe that's just my strange theory. So,
I would pretty much agree.
So that's where I think this is coming from. There's like, maybe we could tap into this parent.
I think you nailed it there, actually, because we are living in kind of the society of nostalgia right now where, you know, everything is being brought back because the people who are paying for everything are now of the age that, you know, you remind them of something from their childhood and they're going to pay for it. So that is a very cynical view, and I applaud that.
But I don't need this movie, and I don't think that many people are clamoring for it. I really like the Don Bluth one, and I'll, you know, if I really want to, I can pop that in, but I guess we'll see.
Or we won't, I don't know.
Or we won't, yeah. What was the last one there, Richard?
So Leonardo DiCaprio recently took the reins on, apparently it's an adaptation of a Daniel Keyes nonfiction book, but it's called The Crowded Room. The original book is The Minds of Billy Mulligan. It's about a man that was charged with robbery and the rape of three women. But he was the first to successfully claim mental illness as a legal defense. He claimed he has alternate personalities that did these things. Anyway, so Leonardo DiCaprio is going to take the reins on this and I think he's a good fit just because of, I mean, he's just a good actor. I mean, it doesn't matter. I don't even care what he's in. He's going to try his best. And so I'll at least give it a shot. And I know that his isn't, he's not necessarily a mercenary actor. He really does try to bring something to it. So I'm curious. I also want to see what they're going to do specifically because the book is about the mental illness angle. So I want to know if they're going to bring up that kind of like the debate about that.
I'm just curious what facial hair he's going to bring to the role.
Could well, be anything.
Yeah, I know.
It's supposed to take place in the 70s, so it could be. It could be. Oh, hopefully, he's a big mutton chops.
Yes, that would be good.
Yeah, it sounds like an interesting story. I don't know. I think with DiCaprio right now, I think I want a little bit more less is more from him. I think he's done a lot of showy stuff lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, specifically like his work with Tarantino or like what was that one about the asylum that he was in?
Titanic.
Shutter Island.
Shutter Island.
Yeah, Shutter Island. Yeah.
And so I think at this point I would almost kind of want to see him do something like that we might see like Clooney in usually. Like, you know, just play, see if he can play like a charismatic dude and just carry a, you know, a pretty straight movie.
Yeah, I mean, he is generally flashy. I mean, Wolf of Wall Street is like, that's like him at his most, like, over the top, but like in a good way. And it's like, you know, usually when he takes on a role, it's like, I'm trying to think of anything he's done that's been understated.
I think the last thing, really, and you could even argue against it, is Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah, I could see that.
And that's something a little bit more around the tone. At this point in his career, I'd be more interested to see. Which isn't to say I think this is going to be a bad movie or that he'll be bad in it. I think he could be very good. But, I don't know. Just immediately, I think of him pretending, you know, or possibly really actually having multiple personality disorder. And something about that sounds kind of meh to me.
It depends on what it goes into.
Right.
For me, specifically, and it is that byline of, for me, like, with my psychology background specifically, like, having the BA, it was really fascinating when I learned that, like, the insanity plea, and, like, psycho and stuff like that, those are law terms. They're not used in psychology, like, proper, unless you are specifically doing, like, a law and psychology, that kind of stuff. And so it's a weird, blurry ground. And especially when we're talking about the actual mechanics of it. So I don't know. I'm interested in that. But I don't know. I trust Leonardo. I mean, even in whatchamacallit, in Great Gatsby, I thought he gave a pretty low-key actual performance. It's just it's
the movie Berman. Around him was, was a Christmas tree. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, he does movies. You know, he's not a guy who does a movie every, you know, three times a year. He's a guy who essentially, when he's in a movie, you do take notice because you say, oh, this must be something that he's passionate about. And I think that comes through. I mean, just looking at his filmography, it's like all the movies that he's done are like really big, kind of, they feel like tent poles. They feel like things with characters that he is really, really interested in, not just like, you know, random cop who is one note and only has one thing to do, you know? I mean, I think he is interesting to me as an actor. And I think he's a guy who he looks really young. And so I think sometimes it's hard for him to play older roles. And even like, I think now he's kind of growing into his age and it's feeling a little more accurate as far as like the characters he portrays. But I know in the beginning I would always be like, I don't know. Like, I don't buy this guy as, you know, whatever, you know, Gangs of New York. It was kind of like, well, I don't know, man. So that's kind of where the facial hair comes from of like, he just seems to be covering up his age by just growing a weird beard or something.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, I think like now at this point in his career, he really wants to like kind of shoot for those like Sean Penn-ish type performances, like the stuff he would have gotten like the early 2000s and the 90s. And he is kind of leaning into that a little easier now than he used to be able to. Well, that pretty much does it for the movie news. And since we have you on here, we're going to forego our pet topic. And just get right into the main review of the week, which is Neil Blomkamp's Chappie. And I feel like we've kind of like had a lot of lead up to this review in the last couple of weeks because we've been talking about his speculation of the new Alien movie, which is apparently going into production here pretty soon now. And I think both me and Richard kind of said that, you know, Chappie is almost going to be sort of the make it or break it of how excited we are about this Alien movie, given that, you know, as far as we're concerned, he's done one good movie and one bad movie. And so I'll definitely be interested to hear from both of you how you felt about Blomkamp in general and Chappie. But let me set that up real fast about what's going on in this movie. This takes place in the pretty near future, near enough that Anderson Cooper is still the CNN anchor. And there's this robot technology funded from the U.S. that's kind of being experimented on in Johannesburg, in the slums of Johannesburg, where every Neil Blomkamp movie takes place. And these robots, robot cops, robocops, one might say, run through these slums, and they're very efficient, but there's a lot of people that are worried that the intelligence that runs them could be hacked, and they could be used for the wrong purposes. Dev Patel from Slumdog Millionaire plays a scientist who is sort of a Geppetto type. He wants to make a real boy out of one of these robots, and he drags, kind of in the background and in the periphery of everything, he kind of works on this assignment by himself and is able to basically create consciousness in one of these cop droids, these test droids. At the same time, Hugh Jackman is a competing scientist who has this larger, militarized, drone-y kind of looking thing that is controlled by bicycle helmets that people wear. So it's instead of pushing the technology further to the robots having a mind of their own, he wants them to be more controlled by people. And has actually a fairly decent argument for that. In the middle of all of this, a couple gangsters, Johannesburg gangsters, played by the electronic rap group Die Atwood, they kidnap Chappie and try and get him to learn how to be a number one gangster to get a bunch of money to pay off these other gangsters. And they kind of got all of these interested parties kind of collide eventually in the movie. So, Richard, I'll start with you. How did you feel about Blomkamp? Is he 2 for 3, 1 for 3?
Well, I thought, Elysium, I still gave him a pass because it was at least an interesting, he had some interesting ideas. And I wouldn't refer to it as a bad movie as much as a mediocre movie.
Right.
Because there were still some great performances and there were some great set pieces and it looked good. It just, like, the story didn't flow properly. Like, it didn't come together. So this movie, on the other hand, I think Blomkamp did another good job. And yes, it fits into the oeuvre of his stuff, like, like very much. And so I could see some people complaining about that, or it is kind of RoboCop-y. But I thought it was more kind of a love letter to that kind of stuff. And then it became a coming-of-age movie, just it was a robot. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was adorable as shit. Like, I really thought this was an awesome movie.
Put that on the poster.
Yeah, adorable as shit. I don't know. There's not a better way to say it. And I really liked the Die Atwood. I thought that they were funny. All the acting was pretty solid. I could have seen a little bit more from both Hugh Jackman and I keep wanting to say Ripley, but
Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah, right. She has a real name. No, I thought that the movie was good. I think that the pacing was excellent. The humor really pulled you in. I mean, I got a little bit of a short circuit kind of maybe nostalgia out of it too. But I thought that there was ideas in the movie too, which is the thing that really charges me about him. And specifically what I think that people are missing is there is a big drone debate out there. And this really kind of and the fear of AI, like, also is kind of a personification and not necessarily maybe we fear it because we're bad.
Right. So we're sort of projecting human imperfection onto a technology that doesn't even exist yet.
Right.
That's interesting. I didn't think about it in those terms. I saw a lot here, about sort of drone technology, I think is sort of one of the more obvious ones. And there's a lot thematically similar to the RoboCop remake that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
And both seem to be tackling similar issues. There's also sort of a weird, vaguely Judeo-Christian God thing going on here, too. This allegory of Dev Patel being the creator of consciousness, and then Dyatwood being this sort of corruptible family type. And I don't know how well that those themes really carry on all the way through. I felt like I had a good handle on what the allegory was, and then I felt like the movie, once it kind of shifts gears into action movie mode towards the last third, kind of dropped a lot of those ideas along the way. But I think that the movie's more good than bad. What about you, Steve? What did you think?
Well, this is going to be fun. Okay. I will respectfully disagree.
Fair enough.
I did not like Chappie. And I think the entire movie hinges on whether or not you actually like Chappie himself. First of all, I don't like his name. That's an issue, which means I didn't like the name of the movie. And it was even when I talk to people about it, it's like, oh yeah, I saw the movie Chappie. And they're like, ugh, what is that? You know, so already it's a little off-putting. I had an issue with a lot of things, but the main conceit of the movie hinges on whether you have feelings for Chappie. Whether you care for him in any way, and also whether you care really for any of the characters, Dev Patel and really just him. And I guess the Ninja and kind of the mom and dad of Chappie. And so I hated Chappie. He is just, I don't know. I mean, and this is a thing where now I'm a person who is a mild Jar Jar Binks apologist. Mild, I'll say. But I can see the comparison of people saying this is like that level. I don't want to go that far, but I think, you know, the idea here is that he is, it's a robot that kind of achieves consciousness, starts off as basically a baby, and then you have to teach it, and then it will grow and learn at an advanced rate. And so that idea to me was, oh, this is very cool. Like, they're going to teach this robot. I don't know why everybody was calling it a robot. Is that how they'd say it in the future? But
I think that might be a South African thing.
Even Anderson Cooper said it that way, though. I don't know. Maybe he was directed that way. But I was like first 10 minutes, I'm like, why? Sigourney Weaver, why do you think it's a robot? I don't know. Anyway, that's a bit of a divergence there. But he starts out as kind of a baby. He talks kind of childish. And it's kind of, you know, it's amusing at first to kind of see him learning. And then he's being, you know, obviously taught by these criminals. And so he's learning kind of that language. And it's like, oh, okay, that's funny. I'm kind of enjoying that. But he never really advances beyond that. And like, for me, that was something that I just could not handle for probably more than half of that movie. So like, even as he does become smarter, because as we find out towards the end, it's like he learns how to magically transfer a human's consciousness onto a flash drive, which was very impressive. But he still talks like, you know, oh, Chappie, mommy, Chappie, you don't, you know, Chappie, no steal, you know, and you're like, dude, like, okay, at this point, I don't know. I think in my mind, I started to go somewhere else with this movie, and it went to a place where, oh, well, what if Chappie actually becomes more and more evolved? And then, you know, become something that no one can really handle. But that's a completely different movie. That's not what this is trying to do. And I just, I don't know. I had problems with Chappie. I had problems really with every character who was essentially one note. It's like, you know, I had a test in the afterwards. I'm kind of thinking back on this movie and I'm like, all right, here's a test. Like, tell me more than one thing about each character. And you're like, okay, well, what do you know about Dev Patel? It's like, okay, well, he wants to be kind of like a god to this machine, but I don't know if he's trying to do it for good or if he's just doing it for his own kind of obsession. What do you know about Hugh Jackman? I don't know. He's like, he built ED-209 and he dresses like the Crocodile Hunter, and he's got terrible hair.
I have a theory about the hair.
Okay. I'm excited to hear it. Do you want to do it now?
All right, I'll go into Hugh Jackman a little. I think he is definitely, if I have a problem with the movie, it's him. And most of the stuff that has to do with him. I think he's unnecessary conflict. that kind of comes in towards the end to more for the explosion factor. Which I don't think this movie really needed to be that movie. And which isn't to say that I think that, you know, the set pieces are done poorly. I think they're done pretty well. Neil Blomkamp has an interesting style when it comes to action sequences. It's very kind of handheld and natural feeling. And the special effects, I think, across the board are really good. I never actually think of what is or what isn't CGI. But Hugh Jackman's character, I think, is the most underdeveloped of the bunch. He's definitely just the bad guy. Even though his argument has an interesting point of view, you know, wanting to keep robots connected to human consciousness so that they have human morals, although that doesn't really follow through with the actions of the character at all. The reason I think he has the terrible haircut is because Hugh Jackman is too attractive and too nice looking, just too friendly, generally speaking, to carry a movie as a bad guy, unless you have some reason to hate him. And I think that was the idea behind the haircut.
It's like kind of, I can see that.
You look at him and you're like, just have a different haircut. Even go back to Wolverine. That's better than this.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I think, and that's the thing. I think what you kind of described as his motivation and what he wants is interesting. Like, fundamentally, it's interesting. And I think that's kind of the whole thing with Neil Blomkamp and all of his movies is, like, these great ideas that are very ambitious. And, like, so it's, like, if you take a step back and you look at, like, the big picture of, like, oh, well, this is what he was going for, then I get it. Like, Elysium was the same thing, where it's, like, I see the big picture and it's, like, a cool idea, but, like, once you get into the nuts and bolts of it, it becomes a little tedious. And it's, like, oh, man, you know, like, I really like the premise of this and the idea, but for some reason it just wasn't clicking for me. I think District 9 kind of nailed that, and that was kind of the, like, you know, that crystallized, like, oh, wow, if this guy's clicking on all cylinders, this is what he can do.
One negative to District 9 that I think a lot of people sometimes gloss over, and I've heard it, it's not mine, it's not original, but I've heard it and I do agree with it, is that it kind of goes into action mode in the last little bit.
Yeah.
And it just kind of...
All of his movies have that problem.
I don't think that this one does as much. I think the actual action makes sense in, because they're trying to set up to a bigger heist. Like, I don't know. I specifically with Sigourney Weaver and Hugh Jackman, I completely agree with both of you.
Yeah.
But with the other characters, I did like Chappie. And also we're talking about something like a first of something. So he was a child still to me. Like, he never got out of becoming the adult version of Chappie. Yes, he was learning at an accelerated rate, but he wasn't developing at an accelerated rate. Like, we don't...
There's still
a
naivety there.
Well, you don't know what consciousness... I mean, really, honestly, we don't know what the fuck a consciousness would be or is besides what we think it does. I mean, even to other humans, really, that's true. Like, you personify somebody, but that's not what they are. So, I liked Chappie, but I also like Charlotte Copley. I never say his name right.
You just did. You did it well.
Did I really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I like him in his mumbleness and his strangeness. I mean, even if you think about his character in District 9, he kind of speaks like that. Oh, I'm the Candyman. I mean, he just speaks like Chappie. Like, it might be a South African thing. I don't know. However, I thought Ninja and Yolandi, I thought that they were amusing, because it's something you don't, it's not a Hollywood traditional, and I liked seeing that different version of those kind of characters, and specifically from the strange ghetto versions of those characters. So.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that. I think those were probably the most interesting characters because of the fact that they were different. They weren't kind of cut from the same cloth that we've seen, because that's the thing, is like, the Hugh Jackman character is in, like, every robot movie ever. Every movie with cyborgs, there's always that other guy who's like, no, I've got a better product, and we got to put it on the streets. And, I don't know what is he just, you know, whatever the hell he wanted out of that, whether it was did he really just want kind of still the human control, but he wanted the glory of his machine to be out there? I don't know. I just, everyone else I really had problems with as far as getting into the characters and caring about them enough that I really was concerned about what happened. And I think, like with Chappie, it's like they would, you know, when they did the thing where they drop him off and he starts getting firebombed and all beat up. And it's like Hugh Jackman catches him at one point and starts sawing his arm off. I didn't feel anything. Like, I just felt like he's just sawing up some metal. And that's a problem for me. And maybe I'm dead inside. I don't know. But something didn't connect there. And that was one of my biggest issues with it.
The titular character. I think if you're not on board with Chappie, if you don't find him as adorable or as sympathetic, then that would hobble the entire thing for you. I think it's interesting, your response to it. However, I know that yours is not the minority response. Me and Richard liking the movie is actually right now more the minority response. And I was kind of bummed out going in because I'd already seen, you know, certain like headlines and stuff of like, oh, critics are not liking this movie. And it's like, oh man. And so I walked in kind of, you know, and maybe this is why, but I walked in expecting a much worse movie than I got. And I think it's messy, certainly. I would also say that District 9 is messy. But I thought that it pulled together pretty well. There's another script issue, and maybe, Steve, you can bring some insight into this as far as, because I oftentimes think about structure and overcomplicating things for no reason. I don't know why the gangsters, played by Di Atwood, wouldn't just have, you know, kidnapped Dev Patel and keep him there, rather than him having to keep going away and then coming back and going away and coming back. I thought that was sort of unnecessary.
Yeah, it's funny because I had another thought about that is that the security in this movie, as far as just keeping people in places, like, it makes no sense. Because, yeah, why would they just let him freely leave and then go and do his thing? Now, you know, it was to ratchet up the tension with Hugh Jackman and make sure there were interactions there, I think. And then, you know, to play – because really, if you kept him there, 90% of the movie happens in kind of an abandoned building. So I think it was, you know, you kind of had to create some diversity. And I guess there's no real dramatic tension if you just kidnap him and then he teaches he teaches Chappie, you know, how to evolve or whatever. But I think ultimately they wanted to teach the robot what they wanted to teach him and they didn't need him. So whenever he left, like, I think they were happy about that. But, on top of that, it's just like the idea of, that was another issue I had, is like the security in this movie with like the military, company and stuff. It's like there is no security anywhere. Like Dev Patel is like, oh, hey, don't smash that robot. And they're like, yeah, okay. And he just goes, takes it, throws it in the back of a van. And there's no one anywhere to be like, hey, I could you not take that $1 billion machine? You know, and it happens again. And later in the movie, it's like Hugh Jackman is just chilling with his giant robot and there's like no one around. It felt to me, it was like a weird glaring, like, wow, this is really making the story very convenient. Like we're able to, you know, they're able to move in and out of all these different places without any trouble. And it was, I don't know, it seemed like a shortcut and like a weird way to just kind of get the story to continue it and almost just an oversight. I don't know.
I like this because like the argument's very, very logical and it's not like, well, I just didn't like this. Like I love that. But to me, I guess I saw him as he's the star child at the company, and he's the only one with the actual, like, security clearance for it. I figured it was just that they gave him specifically, because, I mean, Hugh Jackman had to go through him to get the chip.
That's,
you know,
true.
Not anybody could get the chip. It was only Dev Patel that could do it. Mm-hmm. The other reason, like, I kind of bought the just him being able to throw, like, scraps in is because you saw in his apartment that they were letting him use scraps to build all these other, like, little robots and stuff like that.
Right.
He had parts all over the place. Like, they want him to be working, like, 20 hours a day to make them a better product. The other reason, too, I guess if we're getting into real-world, like, military application kind of stuff, too, immediately what I thought of was the John Oliver episode where they talk about our nuclear arms in the United States and how well those are guarded. And I was like, oh, okay. I don't think that that's necessarily what he's doing. You know, I'm taking my own information and putting it there. But I do think that it's a simplification of the storyline. But to me, it's the overall. You know, because I can go, even in my favorite movies, I can go and pick them apart and say what, you know, the little pieces are that I don't like. But I think that this movie comes together as a whole because of its ideas and because of the... Honestly, I like the whimsy of it. Okay. I like that it's... I didn't really pick up on the Pinocchio kind of story plotting, but it is there completely. And I didn't see him as a god necessarily, as a father. Like, that was his child, because I thought that they went into it more.
Well, there's a few places where it gets even more explicitly into that, because at first I thought, oh, I might be reading into this, but then later, when his battery thing is going down, he says, why would you create me to die? And I was like, oh, clearly this is a god allegory. Yeah, but then when, you know, I don't know, maybe it's a Nietzschean thing, I don't want to give away the ending, but stuff happens, and I thought maybe it's a Nietzschean thing, like, we kill God and then we're creating God. I didn't know. But that's when I thought that thematic stuff just didn't tie together as well as I kind of hoped it would. But overall, I enjoyed this movie. I think it's a step up from Elysium, maybe not a perfect film, and I could see why some people would take issue with it. But I thought that it, you know, as an action film, as a sci-fi film, I thought it was fairly strong.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I maybe I'm being cute on some of this stuff. I'm just, looking at it in a different way. And I think what happened is, once I kind of tuned out of the main story, because again, everything you just said, it's interesting and it's like, that's very compelling to me, but I just wasn't sold on it. And I think if you had something where you gave a little bit of background on the Dev Patel character, where you kind of knew where he was coming from, if I could sympathize with him or his plight, and I don't know if it's, you know, you add a significant other and you add a thing where he can't, this is cheesy, but like, oh, he can't have a child, and so he creates his own in some way. Or, you know, just like some plot device where you're able to reach out and kind of grab onto that and say, like, okay, I get it. I understand what his motivation is, and this is a character that I want to pull for and see succeed in some way. And I think that, for me, just, again, it kind of hobbled the movie, because I was I was looking for something to be inspired by. And I think at one point, is he not – I don't know if it's the scene where he's like furiously computer programming and he's like, oh, give me a Red Bull now. But at one maybe it's later, but at one point he's like sad and he's looking off into the distance and he sees literally like a cat poster and he's inspired by the cat. He's like, oh yeah, cat poster. Yeah. Hang in there, you know? And then he goes off and like achieves his dreams. Anyway, this is the problem, is that because I didn't like the movie, I started focusing on the weird stuff.
Oh no, that's fine. I've done that plenty. All of your points that you've made are completely valid. I think the movie, one of the biggest problems with it is it feels rushed. It moves at a clip, which is a good thing for an action movie because you don't want it to meander around too much. But where there is kind of this coming of age thing going on here, or this, you know, this really strong character arc with this main character, that sort of is at odds with how the movie moves and how it separates the narrative into all these different conflicts. So I think if they had, you know, that's why I would have suggested keeping Dev Patel with Chappie, and instead of the conflict being Hugh Jackman, have the conflict being he's trying to train him one way, and, you know, when he can, you know, in secret, and the gangsters are trying to train him another way, and then it becomes about, you know, that rather than about whatever Hugh Jackman's thing was about.
Well, my take on the character, and like, see, I guess I agree a little bit more with Steve's points, really. Because I that would completely change the movie and make it a very different thing.
Right, I don't think the movie.
That's kind of your argument. Whereas, like, I think that I think it did need more character. Like, you needed a more character involvement. And I guess I sort of relate to Noam Blomkamp's plight as a creative person. Because I tend to, like, a lot of my stuff, like, leave off, like, because people are like, well, this human, like, why is this? I'm like, I don't give a shit about the humans. Fuck them. Like, I don't care. Like, give me the good ideas and the humor and stuff like that. That's what I want. So I kind of tapped into this movie, I think. I think he wrote it for me, personally. well, that's just nice. My ego. But I, But I agree with Steven's thing that to bring it down to another level is we did need a side with, I think, Sigourney Weaver, Hugh Jackman, and Dev Patel. Like, if you just, if you added these little humanizing elements from all three of those characters, I think it would have brought the whole plot together. Now, my take on Hugh Jackman was just that he was an ultra conservative alpha male. That was just my take. That's all he was. But
yeah, I mean, I was reminded a lot, not just because of the giant robot, but I was reminded a lot of the militaristic baddie from Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
He was about as one dimensional as interesting as that.
Oh, I thought he was better than that, but not much.
Yeah,
but I'm more insulting Avatar than trying to say anything.
No, fair enough. As a button to all of this, how do we now feel about Neil Blomkamp's Alien going forward? I still think he could do something interesting with it. I still wish Sigourney Weaver wasn't in it.
That's like, there are two agendas there. You're tricking me, because I either have to engage with one or the other.
That's just my feelings.
Blomkamp, yes. Sigourney Weaver, shrug. It depends on what they're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Steve? Is this this is supposed to... Does this next Alien erase Alien 3? Or Alien Cubed, or whatever we call it nowadays? was that the idea? Is that it's supposed to kind of fall in line with Aliens?
That's been going back and forth.
Okay. Yeah,
Blomkamp said no.
It was originally reported that it was out of that 3 and 4 are out of canon, and then Blomkamp said that wasn't the case, but I think that it is taking place between 2 and 3 at the very least. So I don't know how that's all going to work.
Right. So it's like a secret. They got thawed out at some point and then went back in. And
it could be a parallel timeline, you know, something out of canon.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't like Chappie, but it was a beautiful movie. It looked amazing, and I'll give it that. Like, it's like you said, the effects were pretty much seamless. Like, at no point was I, you know, looking at it going like, oh, that looks like, which this is just on TV last night, but John Carter, which is like, you know, you can see every effect everywhere. But like that, I'm on board with him. If he has a good script, and is he writing it too? Because I feel like if you can get someone else to write this thing, then I don't have a problem with his direction. Because I thought, again, like Chappie does move really well. The performances, you know, even though they're kind of one note to me, like, were strong. And so, you know, I don't give up hope on the guy. I think, again, it's like District 9 is really good. Elysium was okay, but again, big ideas. This one, didn't hit for me, but I'm not against him going after it. At this point, I mean, shit, we've seen, you know, these different iterations of Alien that have not been good at all. You know, anything Alien versus Predator, you know, any of the, like, we just had Prometheus, which was kind of good, but, like, still not quite, you know. Aliens, again, is, like, one of those perfect movies to me where it's, like, just a great, great action movie. And the first Alien is amazing too, and we're never going to touch that. So whatever he does here, it's almost like I can separate myself from it as a fan and just go like, okay, well, this will be an interesting take. And you know, Sigourney Weaver, I don't know. They've already cloned her once in this series, so they can really, they can do whatever they want, and I can't stop them really. So, I don't know. I'll watch it.
Yeah. All right. And I think that I don't know if they're filming it now, we're probably looking a couple years into the future for that one. So I assume that's going to be Blomkamp's next project. So we have that to look forward to or not. Steve, I think I'm going to have you set up our Netflix homework, which you assigned us. Originally, I'd announced on the last episode that we were going to do Robert Altman's Three Women, but I forgot that you were going to come on, and I generally have the guest always pick our homework. So why don't you explain a little bit about what is going on in BMX Bandits?
All right, I'll try and do this concisely. I mean, it's an early 80s Australian film, which stars a very young Nicole Kidman in one of her first movie roles, and she plays one of the titular BMX Bandits. Along with two other young chaps. And basically, it's, you know, these three BMX kids who essentially fall into a plot where they inadvertently steal some walkie-talkies from a couple criminals, which they miraculously find in this secret location that is like, I mean, the odds of them finding this is unbelievable. But so anyway, they find these walkie-talkies that the criminals are using to pull off this huge heist. And then basically the second half of the movie is the criminals chasing down the BMX bandits all across Australia. Or this, actually, it's a really small town in Australia, and a bunch of hijinks occur. And ultimately, it's just like a crazy 80s movie. did I miss anything there? I don't know. I wasn't prepared to give the synopsis, but
I think you pretty much covered it. Richard, what did you think of this movie?
I thought it was okay. This was the thing that I was kind of like weirded out about. I was wondering if this influenced like Richard Donner and some of those guys, because it had very much like that Steven Spielberg-y kind of, I mean, it wasn't necessarily as polished or necessarily as good as some of those. However, yeah, it had that feel like one of those Steven Spielberg early Gremlins, Goonies, all that kind of stuff. But
this came out in 83, which would have been a year after E.T., which also featured a big bike chase.
Oh, maybe that's the thing. But I don't know. I enjoyed it at that level. I mean, it got like the bike chasing got a little tedious.
That's like literally a third of the movie.
It really is.
As an Australian film fan, there wasn't enough violence, but that's my own bias. I mean, somebody's head needed to get knocked off, clearly. One of the children, but you know, that would have made it a very different film. But in general, I don't know, the cartooniness of it and everything. Like, I could not help but think Goonies, like, the whole time I was watching this.
All right. So. I might not rate it that high. But I do agree that there is a kind of inflection there of sort of the Spielberg presents American films. It actually took me a while to realize, just because I had zero idea what this movie was going into it, that it was kind of a kid's movie. Mm-hmm. And sort of has this Hardy Boys adventure thing going on throughout it. And once I realized that about midway through, I was able to kind of stomach it a little better. I think originally I was just like, oh, this is kind of hokey, or I was expecting it to keep going into darker places. Like, I thought this was more of a Ozploitation kind of thing, and it really isn't. But it is kind of fun. I won't go so far as to call it a good movie, because they do spend so much time on that bike chase that I think they're definitely trying to reach that 80-minute mark.
You got me wrong. I think it's a bad movie, but it's so fun that I don't care. Like, I mean, there is that sort of thing. Like, it's like, no, this is just fun. Whatever. Fuck it.
Yeah. So. And it has its own soundtrack, which I always appreciate.
Oh, my God. The soundtrack is incredible.
Yeah.
It is like, I mean, this is just like, this is... I wish I had seen this movie. Like, had I seen this movie as a kid, I would probably have a way different perception of it, because it is, you know, as you said, it is kind of like the Goonies. It's obviously really lo-fi version of that, but like,
yeah,
the kids in it, I liked all the kids. They were very believable. They felt like kind of real kids just joking around with each other and stuff. And, everything they did was natural and it felt cool, but like, yeah, it's just totally an 80s movie. Like, the whole movie centers around them finding walkie-talkies. Like, that was the whole thing, you know? And it's like, the soundtrack is, like, incredibly 80s, but also kind of awesome in that weird, like, retro way. And again, yeah, I don't think I'd call it a good movie, but I can't say that I wasn't, like, entertained by it. I got through the whole thing, and when it was over, I was like, yeah, man, you know, if I was 10, I'd love this thing. Be great.
Yeah. I think if you're a fan of like the Teen Witch, or was that the name of the movie? The one that I'm thinking of? Teen Witch?
Teen Witch is a movie with a teen who is a witch, sure.
Yes, that one.
Yeah.
Or like a Night of the Comet kind of thing, then you can kind of find your way into this. It's sort of more along those lines. And the director, Brian Trenchard Smith, also did
Leprechaun 4 in Space, yeah, it's pretty big. Dead and Driving.
Yes, thank you.
Oh,
Dead End Drive-In. And I've heard a lot about that movie, and that definitely has like kind of a bigger cult following than this one. I'd say that Nicole Kidman fans, completists, should definitely look at this because she is rocking the frizzy hair.
She's a baby.
Oh my God, yeah. You can't even recognize her.
For her complaints, though, I would still say, I mean, I don't think she did bad, and I'm not like one of
I actually think she's the strongest actor of the kids.
Well, yeah. The thing is people who call her wooden, like, and I can kind of see that quality, but it's never been a detractor for me. I think she was kind of that way when she was a kid, too. I don't think it's the Botox. Like, she's just, there's people who affect flatly, and I don't see that as a problem. There are all sorts of people in this world. They don't always have to be the CW types.
What about you, Steve? How are you on the Nicole Kidman?
My dad said it earlier because I mentioned that I saw this movie for some reason. And he said, well, you know, she's only interesting when she's taking off her clothes. And I said, well, Dad, that's kind of a weird thing to say to me, but okay. I don't know. She's kind of... it's like you try to think back of like I'm trying to think right now of like, oh, what's something that I really like her in? Mm-hmm. And I, right off the top of my head, I can't really name anything that really like stuck with me. So I think she's fine. Do you have something? You know?
For me, Stoker.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not really her. That's just kind of the movie.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think it was one of those like stunt casting kind of things where that kind of weird woodenness that she has really works in that movie because it's kind of an icy movie anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Same with The Others. I think she's really good in that because of that persona that she has.
I like when she pees on Zac Efron. That was
nice. Oh, and The Paperboy. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
During her In Memoriam at the Oscars, I'm sure that's the clip they'll use.
Right.
All right. Well, that's pretty much the show. And next week we will do Robert Altman's Three Women still. And there's a bunch of stuff I have to read off here, about where people can find our show. But first, Steve, where would you want people to find you?
You can find me, you can go to, nerdwithwords.com. You can check out some of my old videos there. And, again, if you just turn on your TV every Monday, every Thursday, cable television, somewhere out there, something's going on, that I am a part of.
Do you have a Twitter? Are you on
At Nerd with Words. Yeah, you guys can hit me up there. If you hated what I said, that's all good. Let's talk about it.
Yes, and if anyone has anything to say about any of the movies we talked about today, BMX Bandits or Chappie or Neil Blomkamp in general, you can get in contact to us at our email, which is jabberinthedrone@gmail.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/jabberpodcast. You can find our Twitter at jabberpodcast. We just got like 6 or 7 new people just randomly followed us, so that was cool. I've been participating more in the podcast subreddit, so maybe that had something to do with it. You can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher Radio or the Windows Podcast Network. If you're on iTunes or Stitcher, please leave us a star rating and a one-sentence review. You can read my reviews that I do every week for the Idaho State Journal at saladforkreviews.blogspot.com. You can read my Salad Days review, the punk rock documentary that I did for the MacGuffin at mcguff.in/author/Cassidy. You can read Richard's stuff that he does over at his blog, rdwally.weebly.com. And check out our other friends who do podcasts, Brad, Amanda, and Alyssa over at Quarter Life Crisis at quartercrisis.podbean.com and Leland over in Olympia at dampercast.com. Thanks for coming on, Stephen. It was fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Hope I can come back.
Yeah, it was really great.
And we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Have a good one. Bye.
See you.
Yeah, that's the most awkward part of the show. What I think it is.
Have to land the plane, yeah.
Agreed.